Welcome to Finance Tree's second podcast, sponsored by Ward Hadaway. And we're delighted to be sponsoring this podcast. We specialise in advising both companies and entrepreneurs on venture capital investments. If you'd like more details about our service offering, please visit our website, www.wardhadaway.com. Welcome to one of our most high-profile businessmen and entrepreneurs in the North East, Jeremy Middleton.
Thank you. Hi.
Jeremy, you've been a successful entrepreneur yourself. Could you give me a bit of background about your history?
Well, I first came up to the North East to work for Procter & Gamble, selling soaps and detergents. But that was many moons ago. I was never going to own my own soap company. So together with a business partner, I left and we went into consultancy. I worked for PW those days, and my partner Richard Harpin worked for Coopers. And whilst we were doing that, we spent all our time trying to think about what sort of businesses we could start up. And slowly over time, we got into a series of different businesses. One of them was a 24-hour emergency service called, which we called Fast Fix, focused on plumbing and heating. We tried to raise the money to expand it, and we couldn't raise the money anywhere. But in the end, managed to do a joint venture with a water company in the Midlands called South Staffs Water to try and develop this. This was a time when water companies were thinking about going into plumbing. And we grew the business from there, and it's developed into a company called HomeServe, which provides assistance services around the country, and eventually got to be bigger than the water company, which was then floated off separately on the stock market, and now it's a FTSE 200 company. So from a small beginnings on Osborne Road in Newcastle-on-Tyne, it's grown to quite a sizable business. And then in the last 5 years or so, I've moved out of doing any consultancy on the side, because I'm a non-exec in HomeServe these days, and I work as a business angel around the Northeast, particularly focusing on startup companies, because that's what I enjoy doing, and I suppose I'd like to try and do another HomeServe.
So what is a business angel?
Well, it's somebody who puts in their own risk capital to a business that someone else is running. That's how I would define it. They may only put in money, but certainly in my instance, in the case of most that I know, you're putting in money and what you hope to be expertise, certainly advice anyway.
And do you enjoy being involved in the business then, not just the financial aspects of it, it's the running of
the
business?
Yes, undoubtedly. I mean, if you just wanted to make money, if you were just focused on that, then I think you get a better supply of information almost, and far more certainty, and you can indeed make plenty of money if you're good at it by investing in the stock market. Why would you go and try and invest in a private companies about which there can be so much more risk and uncertainty? So I do this. I mean, clearly the intention is to make money, but I would say to anybody who's thinking of being a business angel, you've also got to really want to do it. You've got to have a passion and enjoy watching people create something. And creating a business that works and thrives and employs people and is successful is a fantastically hard thing to do, but a fantastically rewarding thing to do. And it's rewarding in the process, and it's rewarding if you can get the end results.
So you obviously went through a startup yourself with what became HomeServe, and you said you struggled to find access to finance. If I was starting my business today and was looking for finance, what three tips would you give me to try and attract a business angel investor like yourself into the business?
Well, what you have to do has probably been universal for a long time. But number one, I think you need a unique idea. That's perhaps a statement of the obvious, but that you have to have something that has a unique selling proposition, whatever market you're in. The second thing is you need to show that you as an individual are utterly committed to it, as well as ideally showing you're capable of doing it. That can be by the dedication that you've committed to it, but also by your complete and utter financial commitment to it. If you're asking someone else to put money in, they have to believe that you believe in it utterly. I think those are the two most important things.
Yeah.
The third one is to be able to communicate that. To, as simply as possible, put your idea and your plan onto paper in a method that people can understand. You've got to be able to convey some very simple things. What is the, why is this going to work, and why are you the person to back?
So when you meet a management team for the first time, what are you looking for from those guys that you meet? Are you looking for a complete management team, or just somebody that looks driven and is committed?
No, I don't think you can expect to find necessarily a complete management team. People don't come to raise venture capital if everything is going, or business angel finance, if everything is going perfectly. Mm. You are going to be looking at something which is difficult. But what is pivotal is that the principle is impressive. And impressive in the sense of absolutely knowing their market, impressive of being completely focused on what they are doing, and utterly determined to succeed. I am completely convinced that if people are not, unless they are utterly determined, then the business won't succeed, because things will go wrong and you have to be very resilient. So it's that individual, certainly when you're doing a startup, small operations as businesses as I am, it is the principal individual person that you're looking at. And I think you've got to have one-to-one level, you've got to have a reasonable empathy. They've got to want to have you around, not just because you've got some money, but because they think you can add some value. So a willingness to listen is, you know, helpful. And you've got to want to spend time working with them. Mm. This isn't something that's meant to be a chore or something you have to do. This is something you want to do because you believe in them.
So you almost see it as a partnership then, rather than...
Well, that'd be a bit grand, because they're going to do all the work.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they wouldn't see it that way.
Sounding board, maybe.
It's fair. I think it is a type of partnership. Yeah. Clearly, they bring the work, you bring some capital, but you also bring support and hopefully some advice. I think it is you would look for the team to be fully rounded, but you can't expect it always to be so. Mm. Normally, these businesses can't afford to employ a great many other people. But it's normally the other area where you want them to either have some capability, or where you will need them to hire some capability if it isn't there fairly early on, is in the area of finance. A good financial controller or finance director.
Right. Okay. So I've done my pitch to you. I've sold you my idea. I've sold you myself. I've sold you the vision that I have for a business. What process do you then go through before you actually put your money in? In terms of due diligence, and what, right, what are you looking for from the legal process in terms of protections of your investment?
That's interesting. When looking at due diligence, what you're really looking to find out is, have you been told the truth? Or at least you may have been told what the person telling you thought was the truth, but do you believe it's still the truth? So are the numbers what you have been told they are? Are there, in particular, any nasty hidden bits? So that requires a certain amount of investigation, which I need to be sure has been done. The other element of due diligence is around, and this is the one that more interests me, is around whether the idea will work. You can have a good gut reaction to it. And the way that I find helps to get some validation is go to an expert or some potential customers and ask them. And fairly quickly you can find that there is either support, yes, that is a great idea, or, hang on, we've already seen three of these and I'm not convinced. Mm. So it's basic validation of the numbers and of the idea. That's the main aspect of due diligence. In legals, I think the key bit is that it's been properly thought through all the what-ifs if things go wrong. It's terribly easy in the... you only make an investment because you think it's going to work.
Yeah.
So the easiest thing in the world for all parties is not to think about what happens if it doesn't. But seeing as 9 times out of 10 it doesn't work quite as well, clearly you do need to have thought all those through.
Mm.
Now, they're not. It's not always from a negative side. I'm always interested in thinking about the very long term, which not all people who are business angels or venture capitals do. So I like to think that if this really succeeds, I may not want to sell this company. I therefore want to make sure there's provision for appropriate remuneration to come out through dividends and so on as well.
Yeah.
And you've also got to cover all the other implications of if a sale happens or if there's any form of corporate restructuring, that you're duly protected. Some, you know, often though we don't want it, people come back, they need to raise more money. You need to make sure that the next people who come along don't wipe you out. So those are the sort of protections that I'm looking for. And I look to, bluntly, I look to professional advisors to provide most of that.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I don't need to know how to put it together. I do need to know what it is they're talking about.
What you're looking for. So you've invested in your business. I mean, what sort of return are you looking for from that business? I mean, there's obviously an emotional return in terms of the sense of achievement and making success. But looking purely at the financial side, how do you get your money back and some, hopefully?
I think you've got to look at it as a portfolio. Obviously, you only make an individual investment because you think it will work. And you're only going to look to do that from a purely financial point of view if you think you can make a major multiple of the money that you put in. And by that, I mean, you know, 5 times your money plus. And ideally, you should be looking for 10 times your money. Now, that sounds enormously avaricious. But then you've got to think about across the portfolio what people say in the industry is the case. And I've no reason to say that they're wrong, that of those investments that you make, you need to make, you're thinking about making 10 of them as a minimum portfolio size, because of those, 3 or 4 or perhaps 5 of them won't survive. Mm. 3 or 4 of them will bumble along, and you're looking for the 1 or 2 that's really going to work. And I think what will happen in practice is you don't get your 5 or 10 times on, well, you certainly don't have the 5 that go down, but you don't particularly, you'll be lucky if you get your money back on the ones that survive. But, and there's some phenomenal multiple you can make if you really get a big business idea that works. So it's very difficult to apply those. So in each instance, actually, I have to, what I look for is there a potentially big idea for the business? Mm. And can that translate potentially into the company being worth a lot of money at some stage? And if I believe that, then I don't really worry about projections and multiples because they never happen.
Mm. I mean, there's obviously various routes to finance for a business. There's institutions, venture capitalists out there that will invest in businesses. There's friends and family, and there's guys like yourself, business angels. Just looking at comparing yourself to a venture capitalist, how do you think your approaches are different, if indeed they are?
I guess I can't speak for them. I think when I think of venture capitalists, mainly I tend to think of them as focusing on much larger scale investments. That's because they've got a lot more money, partly. I think because anybody who's in the investment game works out after a while that the best way to make money isn't to do startup businesses, but to invest in later stage businesses or management buyouts. And so that's where most of the venture capital money goes. So I think we tend to focus on different areas. I think the other area that I'd say of those venture capitalists that do show an interest in smaller and startup deals, I think that they are always focused on how do I get my money back, which I know everyone would say everybody is focused on. But from and that's because they've got to show a return to their shareholders, and they try and do so within 3 or 5 years. Mm. I mean, I'd like my money back sometimes as well. But it's an interesting point, because when I've invested in a business that works, then I would say, why would I want to sell this business? Because if I sell it, I'm then going to give the chance to the exchequer money, which I don't want to do. And then I've got to find another company to invest in. And seeing as I had to invest in 10 to find this one, why would I do that? Mm. My point of view would be to stick with something that works and keep my money in, because the capital is still there, albeit invested in the company. And I think that the significant money from early stage companies is when they're not early stage, is from after 5 years and potentially up to 10 years. I know that sounds a very long time. Mm. So when I invest in it, I don't think anybody should be doing this sort of investment unless they're prepared to put the money in for a considerable period of time. I'm certainly thinking about the very long term, and I think they tend to look slightly shorter, and that's why they tend to disappear from the space around very early stage businesses.
Yeah. I mean, what I'd like to do now, Jeremy, is look at a couple of the investments you've made. You're still invested in the companies, and just to talk about your thought process when you invested, where the business has gone, the challenges they've faced, and what you've learned from hindsight from those investments. First one is a company called D-Line, I believe. Mm-hmm. What does D-Line do?
D-Line makes decorative trunking. I expect people may be familiar with the normal electrical trunking that hides wires. It's white and it's square. Well, D-Line's run by a chap called Paul Ruddick, who did run a sort of lighting wholesaling company, which he sold and had some money, and then wanted to do as a complete startup this D-Line business. And its point of difference is that It is decorative. It's different colours, and it is rather than square, it's curved and tremendously attractive, and it's hinged. It has a very practical thing that if you, for example, putting up a plasma screen, it can look attractive in your house rather than unattractive to hide the wires. And it's got a tremendous number of other applications as well. And this would be a couple of years ago that I, along with others, backed Paul on a startup, and backed it because it was, first of all, the trunking market is enormous and worldwide. Secondly, it was largely square and white, which seemed very uncreative. And Paul had this idea and patents to go into the a distinctive niche, and so I thought that has got good potential. It's just, so it's a big idea. And Paul himself had shown himself to have some business capability, and he was a really determined guy. So that was the background to the investment. And I guess you're wondering how it's gone.
Yeah, what's happened since then in the 2 years since you made that investment?
It's been a tough struggle because from initial production, the expectation was that it would go into electrical wholesalers, and electricians around the land would think this was a wonderful product, which allowed them to do certain things quicker, and would rush to buy it. And that didn't really happen. And what we've learnt is that it's a much better DIY product. At least it's so that when you get it into stores, that and the consumer can see it. Then they will buy it. Now it's for sale in B&Q and it's selling extremely well. So the business has grown. It's probably fair to say that it's now sort of at a break-even sort of position would be a broadly reasonable thing to say. Mm-hmm. And it's dominant in its sector. And it's kind of got quite a reliance on B&Q, but is growing into lots of other markets as well. And I think it's got great, from here, it's got great growth potential in the UK. And it can become a nice, profitable business. But it's also got the potential to be replicated worldwide. And if you talk about learning from D-Line, it is a good product. It was jolly tough. When it didn't work one way, you had to try it another, so it took longer. Mm. We were supportive, so when it needed more money, we were prepared to give it because we liked the idea. It was progressing, and the management was great, and he has got a good team.
I mean, what I get from that experience is the willingness to be flexible with the business model. If one thing doesn't work, try something else, and be willing to do that. Because some entrepreneurs get stuck in a particular path, even if that path isn't working, and won't go off at a different route.
You need to be willing, but it's absolute necessity. Yeah. If we'd have carried on trying to sell into electrical contractors, we wouldn't have got the sales and the company would have gone. The reality was, because the difficult part amongst the business model is figuring out which bits are right and which bits are wrong. In that instance, there's nothing wrong with that route to market. We just hadn't educated the electricians that they wanted it or persuaded them, shall we say.
Yeah.
But by putting it through a different route to market, suddenly there's the opportunity to drive the volume. Mm. And if you've got a top line, you've got a business to manage. But if you never grow a top line, there's not much you can do about it.
Yeah, sure. That was D-Line. Another interesting one, I think, particularly in the current economic climate, is a company called For Sale Sign Analysis, which I think you've invested in 4 or 5 years ago,
for
recollection.
Yeah.
How's that one gone, and how did you get that opportunity initially, and then how's the business progressed since you invested?
Well, For Sale Signs Analysis collects information on houses that are for sale around the country, and then it sells it to estate agents as market share data. And I was at first became interested in this company when it was really at the idea stage. I mean, it had a certain amount of its management had some experience in the past, but it really was a startup. And I thought it was an interesting model, but I was particularly interested in the value of information on people who are about to move homes and how that could be useful data to others. And so I made an initial investment some years ago. That business, this would be 3 or 4 years ago, really struggled because it was finding it difficult to sell into, to persuade estate agents this was useful information. And indeed, it went into a CVA because it couldn't it had problems given its income with the amount of debt that it built up. But it made an arrangement with its creditors, which was acceptable to them. And by the management team focusing on great operations and focusing on building an effective selling operation through telesales, slowly grew its way to becoming a profitable business, paid back all the CVA, and moved into really quite an attractive profit position, and was just 18 months ago looking at becoming, you know, a highly successful business. You may have, of course, spotted the fatal flaw in the business by now, which is it sells to estate agents. And given that about half of its customers have either gone bust or in the process of doing so, it's going through a tough time.
Sure.
So the management are having to show great resilience and sadly having to cut back on operations. But it's the only thing it can do for the business to survive. So it's a tough time again. Mm. But I'm confident the business will survive because it's a good idea. We now know exactly how to grow the business when the housing market does recover, and I mean movement rather than prices. And we have quite a number of other ideas in there as well. So that's another example of tremendous resilience and people fighting through. But it employs, you know, quite a lot of a reasonable number of people now. It's got a great idea. It's almost a unique alone in the market in exactly the way it does it. And it's well poised for growth when it comes back. So I think it will have a decent future and will be older and wiser when it does.
But with supportive investors sitting behind them as well.
Sure.
I think that's absolutely fundamental.
But the support of the investors is when they look across the table and think, I still trust this person.
Yeah.
I still think it can work, and I think that they believe it can work, and I trust them. And when you look in the eyes of a principal and you see doubt, that's when...
Start getting nervous.
Well, that's when you see the end.
Yeah, sure. So, Jeremy, just to conclude, can you give me your three top tips for raising finance from business angels?
Well, I think the most important thing is to have a great idea, a big idea, something that has a unique selling proposition to it. It's perhaps a fairly obvious statement, but is the most fundamental and can sometimes be missed. I think the second most important thing is that there should be at least one person who is the principal, who is utterly driven, and who persuades the investor that they understand this market and they are utterly committed to delivering it and they're capable. It's that leader role that I think is vital. And then I would just say to have a plan that explains that. I think it can be very simple. It needs to be only as long as the amount of space required to cover off and explain the first two points. Mm. And those three points might sound fairly basic and fairly simple, but that is what it's about. Now, it's extremely hard to come up with all three, but that's what I think somebody who wants to raise finance needs to be coming up with.
Thank you very much for your time, Jeremy. It's been really helpful and useful, and lots of top tips there from you as an experienced investor. So thank you very much for your time this morning.
No, not at all.
If you'd like more details about Ward Hathaway, please visit our website www.wardhathaway.com.